Man, you cannot be serious!
I tell you what, I was staggered just before we started today when I said speaking to the microphone. We've got Simon O'Donnell sitting here, and Don said just before you turned the machine on, what are we going to talk to him about? Can you believe this?
Can you get up and put the blind bit behind Simon? I can't see him with the glare. Thank you.
Oh, holy.
Don't swear. Just no, the other one, mate. He's sitting in. Jeez.
Can I say something first off?
Please.
Oh, yeah. Hello, Simon.
Please.
I'm now 57. I've been around the media for 30 years.
Have you?
I've never been more nervous sitting in front of a microphone than I am right now.
Well, Donald, you wait till you get some questions out of left field from this bloke. You wait. I'm pretty straight
Put
with all this.
Put the blind down, Rod.
Oh, shut up, Don, well, about the blind. Who cares about the blind? Oh, Don, please. Now, we asked... Simon O'Donnell is a star in anyone's terms, Donald.
Thank you. Now I can see him.
Oh, my God. Simon O'Donnell is a star. I've worked with him when I first started on... Channel 9, he and Dermot and I did a little football panel show. He was the inaugural person that I worked with on the Sunday footy show or a football show on 9. His name is Scoop. I have no idea why they call him Scoop, his nickname. He's a new... Scoob. Scoob. Well, there you are.
Scooby-Doo.
Hang on, Don. We won't ask you, we'll ask him. You will know all his cricket statistics, but I know this because I looked it up. He has, I still think, the fastest 50 made in a one-day innings game. He did it off 20 balls. I don't know what that means. You're a cricket man, but you'll know what that means. He's a horse breeder. He's been on the television. He's a great cricketer. He played football for St Kilda. And besides other things, just talking to him because he's a very interesting man, he can tell us how he knew and what he knew about Dean Jones. Well, not what he knew about him, but just his experience with him. So welcome, Simon O'Donnell. Sim, I call him.
Good to be here. And he's cool. I'm glad you got the St Kilda bit right, albeit it was probably a minor part of a period of my life.
Who cares?
No, because the last time I saw you, you said Melbourne. You're still seeing a few of your Melbourne team.
That's right. Yeah, that's exactly right.
I never played again.
And do you know who I got you mixed up with? Who did I get you mixed up with?
I don't know.
I got you mixed up with someone else.
So that
he
was
thought fun. You played for Melbourne.
You know, my great mate Sammy, we go back 30 years.
No, I got
Sammy
you mixed
says,
up.
Oh, gee, how are your Melbourne teammates going?
I know, I got you mixed up with someone else we had on this show.
Oh, you are.
I know. I'm but he played 24 great games for St Kilda.
Fantastic.
And I play golf with him. He's a great golfer. He came down to Royal Melbourne once.
Simon's poor son. He doesn't know what's going on.
Well, I wasn't going to mention Simon's son because I don't think we're meant to have more than 28 people in the room at once. But now that you've mentioned him, Simon's son is here. And his name,
James.
James, I'm sorry, Jim. I didn't. Does anyone call you Jim? Well, I'm calling you Jim. Don won't even remember your name in half an hour. And I've played golf with Sim out at Royal Melbourne. We played once there and he hadn't played for, I think he said, 3 years. And he came out and he was off 12 or 13 or something. He parred the course and took about $1,000 off me. So you could just leave that on the table as you leave because I was completely...
I was wondering what the fee was.
I was completely reamed... by the great Sim O'Donnell. So, Simon.
Are we telling golfing stories?
I want you to tell us anything
you like. I want
you to
answer a question. Ask him a question.
Don, could I... He's brought up golf. Don, you've known him a long time and, you know, a lot longer than I have. I've always known Sam as a very modest human being.
Thank you.
We played a game at Cathedral about 6 months ago, maybe 8 months ago.
Oh, it was Cathedral. It wasn't Royal Melbourne, was it? No wonder I thought you played for Melbourne.
And cathedrals built in the hills at the back of Thornton and Eildon.
Yeah, up near Yark, not Yark. What's Alexandra.
Yark, up there, up that way.
Yeah. David Evans.
16 of the 18 holes are basically, you know, the most dangerous thing is a rampant kangaroo or a misled wombat. You know, you're out in the middle of nowhere. You know, there's a brown snake will go across, and as you're hitting your 7-iron, you know, it'll come into your eye line. So we play 16 holes where not a human being can see you. We get to the 17th hole, which is at the front gate of Cathedral, and the only place where basically your game becomes public, and you drive the car along. And Sam comes up in his cart, and he says to the owner of Cathedral, "Can I take a piss?"
Well, there were no facilities, Adam.
He's had 16 holes where Fiddicum, a satellite wouldn't have spotted him. And he thought he should take one beside the main driveway of Cathedral, the only two holes that a human can actually see you. He said, "Do you mind if I take a piss?"
And as I
had there wasn't a tree. No, don't you hang on me. There wasn't a tree for a kilometre. And out of the goodness of his heart, the proprietor said, "Where do you think you're going to take it?" He said, "Right here will do." And they were expecting the governor.
The governor.
Sammy thought he'd be good idea. The piss on the governor's wheel like a dog.
No, that is true. Well, look.
Oh, I've got to go and take one now.
David Evans is very hospitable, and he'd plied us with some alcoholic propellants, beverages. And I had a couple of bottles of water because it was fairly tepid out there. And the 16th tee, I got a bit tight in the purse, and I said, "Dave, would I be able to relieve myself?" I didn't think I did say could I have a piss, and he said, "Yes, Sam." I should have realised he was reticent when I heard him stammer. He said, "Yes, where are you going to do it?" I said, "How about right here?" And I pissed on one of the tea markers just as its fleet of limousines came in through the gates with the governor and the mayor of Thornton, who were coming in for a morning brunch with him. That was extraordinary, wasn't it? And Dave, I've never been back since. Never been back since. I got in the truck and drove straight out. So anyhow,
are we finished now?
You know, thanks for coming in. So I want to speak to you about you, not Dean Jones at the minute, but I want to know, Don will love this. It says amongst your many credentials you are a horse breeder. What? Not a horse trainer.
No.
What for the novice, for the man who has no idea, what, do you go and select horses and couple them up and hope they'll copulate?
No. Unfortunately, with your very detailed research, I don't breed horse.
What says you're a horse breeder?
Well, you said I'm a horse breeder.
Well, the Wikipedia did.
Oh, hang on. Oh, you live your life through Wikipedia, do you?
Well, when you're trying to find...
How many more things do you want to get wrong? Seriously.
Oh, I looked up and I said, he played 27 games for St Kilda. I said, fucking St Kilda. I thought he was a Melbourne player. And I said, go on. So what is the horse's involvement, please?
The property we've had run now for 26 years. 26 years.
Where's the property, yeah?
We pre-train and break in horses.
What's that
and
mean?
Spell horses. So, if you like, we're the educator for a start. We teach horses how to be under saddle and mouth
educate
them.
The horses?
Educate
them to be a racehorse.
So, you're a horse whisperer?
No, I'm not a horse whisperer. No, I'm way far from it. Then we'll pre-train them, which is say the fitness guy over summer has them before you give them to your coach.
A horse.
We'll bring a horse up to a certain level of fitness, and then the horse goes off to its... It's main trainer.
So I'm not taking the piss out of you because I'm genuinely... So what qualifications or credentials do you... So a trainer sends a horse to you and you finish it off, do you?
No. So we start it off. So they buy it as a yearling. All it's had is a head collar on it at that stage.
Have you trained to do that? Have you done a course or...
No, I have people that work with me.
Oh, so you're an enabler.
I'm an enabler.
Aha. Good.
That's exactly. I have delegate people that do the breaking in and the pre-training.
You're just the money man.
I just.
You're the financier.
I oversee things. From here, I oversee things in the office because it gets pretty cold outside.
At least you're making us laugh during the lockdown. I haven't laughed for 4 months. go on.
I've never been called an enabler before. Do you think that'll now come up on my Wikipedia profile? Enabler.
Oh dear. Go on.
Oh shit.
So 26 years you've been doing it. Yeah. Are you a fervent race goer when you were allowed to? Did you go to the races?
Missing the races enormously. Said to
by going.
Yeah, by going. I love going to the races. Yeah. I don't mind watching them if I can't get there, but if I had a horse running or whatever, I love to watch it live. So right. Whether that's a Chuka, Warrnambool, Warwick, Nabil, I don't care. Yeah. I'll drive and watch it.
I'll watch it live.
Oh, yeah. I love watching it live. Said.
Really? Well, no.
He said he goes to the races to watch it.
A lot of people sit on their ass, don't they, at home, and the trainers don't.
He just said. John,
it is unusual for someone to do what he's just said. They do sit at home, the trainers. They don't go to the meeting at Swan Hill.
And us being enablers,
enablers, not an enabler.
We don't see that finished product often, Don. So I want to go and watch the finished product. You know, the finished product that we've made a contribution to it getting there. You know, you'd like to go and watch it and see how it's grown up and how it behaves and all those sorts of things. So I think it's important you do get there and you see all that pre-match and post-match. You know, build up and finish off.
So you growing up in Deniliquin, you a city boy or a country boy?
Country boy.
What if he grew up in Deniliquin? Well, he'd only be a city boy. He's born in this country town.
So you had horses?
Had horses. Yeah, on the farm. They were the old days of you know, there was no such thing as a farrier popping around. You just got the chisel and the hammer out of the back of the car.
So you can do it?
Trim the horses, yeah.
Good on you. Yeah. He's not a fool, Johnny, this man.
Well, as soon as you said
he's an enabler, sits in the office, that's bullshit.
I didn't
if he can
say
do what
that.
He just said then, he knows a bit.
I didn't say he sat in the office. I said he delegates, he gets a team he together and organises them.
He knows what he's doing.
Well, I didn't say, did I? To be an enabler.
So
you
when you go, when you get
doing.
These, so you're racing horses
Jesus,
now.
Jim, it's
yeah,
unreal,
race a few.
Okay, do you go to England to buy the?
I've done that. Yeah, I've done. Done
so
a lot
what are you
of
buying
that,
over there? Tried horses.
Tried horses that are, you know, they've got pedigrees to be competitive here over staying trips, and you know they've already shown good stamina over there. And you bring them back here and try and win.
You're not getting
our major
the best,
cups.
Though, are you at the tried sales? So you're not bringing the best back here. The best ones will be left back over there.
But you don't get your hands on the best.
No.
So the horses second and third tiers.
Yeah. So these horses are coming out for the Melbourne Cup. That's where they're coming to. Mm. They're about second or third tier as far as stayers go.
You know your main ones, your big stables will keep them at home. You know to win their Gold Cups and you know their more prestigious staying races. And then, you know, probably their second and third tiers that are still very, very good horses. Because, you know, literally all their racing done over there is at weight for age level. You know, they have very few handicap races. So, you know, second and third tier level are very good handicappers here. You know, are top brass handicappers here.
You won't probably appreciate this, but to bring it into context, we have a book called Ifs here, and it's a book on ifs. And I asked Don last week, I said, if you could have the world's largest collection of anything in the world, what would it be? And most people would say maybe art or stamps or coins. Don said he would like to have the world's largest collection of horse bits. And I said, what are horse bits? He said, they're bits of metal that go in horses' mouths. Would that be on your top list of things you'd like to collect in the world?
What the bit goes into,
yes.
I'd be very keen on.
You'd like to have the world's largest collection of horse bits?
No, horses.
Horses.
Thoroughbred horses, racing horses, yes.
Horses' bits.
No. So the bits that the horses are, the steering wheel for the horses, which the bits are, you know, I commend Don for his love of those bits, but I'm probably not as enamoured with those bits as Don is.
The world's largest collection of anything in the world would be horses' bits.
But horses go differently depending on the bit that's in their mouth. Mm, Simon, correct. Just correct. Correct him, will correct. You, please?
No, I'm
and
sure
so if
they
you
are.
Have horses, you've got to have a... I believe you've got to find the thing that a horse is compatible and likes going in.
I'm sure, Donald, but to have the world's largest collection out of anything you could have in the world, horse bits, you said you'd hang them on the wall and people would come around and look at them and say, shit, look at that, that's a nice horse bit. You're a tripper. Jim over here, Jim, who's not meant to be in the room because we're meant to be, so he's never heard anything like this. He's watching your old man ferry questions. He's watching his old man ferry questions from two of the greatest imbeciles on the planet. Now, don't go too long about the horses, Don. We got a lot of ground.
Okay,
to
football.
All right,
your father played at St Kilda?
Yes, he did. He did.
Now, is Johnny O'Donnell, is he your cousin?
Yes, he is.
Really?
Yeah.
Jumping you got Jack. A question there, Don?
Well, I played with Johnny, played for St Kilda Force, the thirds and whatever else, and I followed, I was at Hawthorn doing the same, and Johnny played a few games early on at St Kilda, didn't he?
Yeah, big high marker, 28.
He was a big Johnny. Jumper, Johnny, and he got into the fashion industry, he was an agent.
Which I met you way back with
really?
John, yeah, and I should, it'll what, come to me before school, we finish here, and this could take a long time, obviously, with the pace we're getting through things. I'm not sure. We'll be sending Jimmy out for breakfast in a minute. But, I've forgotten the name of the apparel
Dash-O?
Label. No.
He was the agent for Dash-O.
Yeah, no. He started his own apparel, and it was in Little Bourke Street, his office in Little Bourke Street there. You walked, and I met you in there with him one day.
Okay.
What was Don doing in there?
Buying.
I think Don was doing a bit of a modelling contract with Jack at that stage.
Well, with the open neck trousers, Don? Don used to do fashion with the open neck trousers, just do the catwalk. Now, Sim, the 24 games you played for St Kilda, who was the coach and what was the... And you obviously truncated the career to move into cricket. How was your experience over the 24 senior games you played?
Which won't surprise you. I had two coaches.
I had 24 games.
That's what they went through coaches like to a year for 20-odd years. Who were they?
My first was Jezza.
Jezza.
came from Carlton. And, you know, as a kid,
79?
Growing up.
79?
No, 81.
Oh, sorry. Yep.
He came over from Carlton as a playing coach.
Yep.
And then he stopped playing the end of 81 and was coach in 82. And I played my first game in 82. And like he was my childhood hero,
yep.
Jezza.
Yep.
And I thought, wow, you know, can he be coached by Jezza? Well, that lasted about 8 games. He got fired. So we were flying at that stage. We were 0-8. Jezza is out. So, and then...
Who?
The second coach was Tony, just TJ.
Oh, Tony. Oh, gee.
How long did he last?
He outlasted me, TJ. I retired before he went.
That's not even funny.
So, TJ's. He had a couple of temperament issues, TJ. So we saw eye to eye if you got a few kicks, but I'll tell you, it was a distant friendship if you hadn't got any. So I wouldn't say TJ and I remember that close.
I'm working with him on Thursday. I'll mention him to you.
Please do.
Say
that useless idiot. We played a game at Victoria Bay. It was last game of the year. Last game of the year in 80, I think it was 83. And Collingwood had to win it, I think, to get into the four. We had to win to get off the bottom. So we had breakfast at the Retreat Hotel in Nicholson Street, near Victoria Park, I was sort of new to Melbourne. I thought the only Nicholson Street I knew was the big Nicholson Street and the tram up and down. So I was half an hour late for breakfast because I got lost. So TJ, I walked into breakfast, I'll never forget it. Well, the fellow with over Dean Charon.
Oh, yeah.
Seltrino, who was late with me. he said, gee, Scoob, I joined the fine. You know, it was a drop punt from Victoria Park. Oh, we had breakfast and then we went over to the...
So you walked in late and he wasn't too happy?
Yeah, no, he was on the chalkboard. I mean, look, it was if, you know, I knew you were no good, O'Donnell. So I had what was left of the cold bacon and eggs. No one even attempted to warm them up. I was just eating those. So we went over to Victoria Park. We got changed. We went to run out on the ground. The Collingwood cheer squad, you remember the race at the Victoria Park? Collingwood cheer squad put four wooden spoons at the end of the race. It was absolutely fantastic. It was as if you know, you might get pumped up in the room, so we'll just give you a gentle reminder of where you sit.
I tell you, mate, you've got the most infectious. When I play golf with you, you've got the most infectious laugh and sense of humour. I never laugh more than anyone when I'm with you. It's extraordinary. I don't laugh in any given month. But when I see you, you make me laugh. I don't know why. That was extraordinary.
It was worse to come. It was worse to come from the breakfast and the wooden spoons. Because it came half time and I was on David Cloak, big cloak. He was throwing me around as if I was just fresh air. I reckon he kicked three and you know, 12 marks and whatever. I hadn't had a statistic. Zero on my statistics. So he came in and DJ could see he was going to blow up. And he sat us around the room. He went through everybody. Excuse me. And he got to the second last, which was Barks. And I thought, oh, if I'm next to Barks, I'll be all right. he threw the feather duster at Jeff Fiddler. the thing that sort of buggered that, you know, he wanted to split him right between the eyes. It was vicious throw. Fitz caught it. So Fitz caught it. So we're all half pissing ourselves laughing. TJ said, you're all useless. So he got to Barks. Barks was sounding good. He actually threw the clipboard at Barks. The blue clipboard he gave that sort of
Barks frisbee like.
And it got to me. I was the last one. He had no missiles.
He ran out of furniture.
Which I was thrilled about. There was nothing left to throw.
Threw a chair at
you. Oh, no. He said, you. He was lifting louder and louder. He said, you. He said, schoolboy prodigy. He said, go back there. Oh, I'll never forget it. And out we went in the second half. We lifted. I end up getting beat by about 80 points.
That is extraordinary.
I retired that summer. It's time to give this cricket a go.
I had people finding this as funny. That's extraordinary. I've never lost so much in my life. He'd run out of things to throw at you. Oh, you go back. Oh, that's extraordinary.
So then you. Then you
where are we at now?
We're starting. We're going to get on to. We'll sober up when we get to Dean. But you start. Then when started the cricket, and this was your real. Don, you got all the stats about cricket.
Oh, I've got nothing.
I did read this. I don't know if this is true or not, because it did say you played for
Wikipedia
Melbourne.
Wikipedia again? Did you name your source before you read?
Wikipedia said you made your test debut in 1985 and your last test in 1985. Did you play?
It was a bit like the coach's careers.
You made your test debut in 85 and your last test in 85.
Yeah.
How did that
work? Played the Ashes in 85 in England.
Yep.
And came back as 12th man at the first test. He played the second test against New Zealand.
Yep.
Pre-Christmas.
Yes.
Hurt myself in that test match. Slid into a fence and hurt myself.
Uh-huh.
I missed the rest of the season, basically, and never played test cricket again.
Why not?
That was it. I couldn't get back in, Don.
Why?
I wasn't good enough.
But hang on. This is what I can't understand about this. You might be able to clarify for me. Why do they have, mark you as a one-day player or a test player? Why do they do that? I mean, the same thing's there. It just you got to score a little quicker, I think, in a one-day game.
Yeah, we got to a... We had a really... We were a young mob. You know, we had Border was our captain.
Yeah,
the rest were very young.
Yeah.
Over that 3 months, Steve Waugh had come in and started to make a name for himself. Mark was coming on the scene, and I wasn't playing any less well, for a better way of putting it, in Shield cricket. But the Test lineup had sort of found its in that time I was away. It found its level, and I couldn't fight my way back in. That was I don't think it was anyone's fault.
As far as an all rounder, you could bat and bowl. Who else could do it at that time?
I wasn't much good at the ball. Like I had a lot of I gobbed off a lot. I wasn't a great bowler, Don. Actually, I wasn't a great batter. I wasn't that good in the field.
Well, what'd you play?
I'm not sure what I played. I'm not actually sure what I played, to be honest. I was scared of Tony Jewell.
Can I just say, I just looked it up. You guys actually did come back. So it was 15 goals to 4 at halftime, and you outscored them 10 goals to 9 in the second half.
In the second half, did we?
Yeah.
So we'd only got beaten by the 10 goals.
63 points you got beaten by.
Yeah,
okay. You did outscore
them. Well, that's sort of a victory.
Yeah, you're you're underselling yourself a bit.
I know. The very appealing part of your persona.
Yeah, you're underselling. Your
humility.
I didn't know why you gave the football away because you were starting to crack it. I reckon they crucified you your first year as a kid from school playing down forward. Then you went down back and I reckon you were just starting to show it. Then you just gave it away. I think you're putting yourself down a bit too much.
Yeah, you are. But that's a great attribute to have as opposed to a lot of other people who lift their stocks up when they shouldn't. So you then became an enabler 26 years ago got into something that you really have a passion for. But you were sought after, weren't you? I know this. You were sought after. Don't say you weren't because I know you were. Sought after in the media for radio and I'm not sure about the print, but certainly television, weren't you?
I had a long time doing some in the media.
Nine, and
I had 27 odd years at Channel 9.
Yep.
But I never fully embraced media, if you like. I was never comfortable. Wanted to be, and nothing against journalists, but I never wanted to be a journalist. I wasn't a journalist. I didn't have journalist in me.
Yep.
I had the sports person in me and looking after them.
And you're articulate.
I wouldn't say
yeah,
overly
yeah,
articulate.
You could speak.
Right.
Would you in between laughing? No, you could. No, you would.
But yeah, I had a wonderful time from a media point of view, but I don't think I was ever passionate about the media.
So, what are you passionate about then?
Breeding horses.
Oh, I love horse racing.
Do you? I thought you were very good commentating on the horses when the Nine had it. I thought you gave an insightful way. There's a girl that does it now for Fox. No, what's that thing, 78?
Mm.
There's a girl there that does a very good job. But I used to, because a lot of people talk shit on the races, they know nothing about it, but you at least gave a little bit of an insight into it because you could see your passion and your knowledge about with regard to horses.
Well, Don, I tried to pride myself on, from a horse racing point of view, I suppose, to talk in layman's term about the horse and what you're trying to do in a race and what the horse did in a race. The game now is too statistically driven. Everyone just says, you know, they ran, you know, 22.3 and it did the last 600 and that, and it did that and that, and, you know, there's more to it than that. And it annoys me sometimes even now when I sit there with people I work with and they just trot out these statistics. Yeah. You think, mate, look at the way a race was run. Look at what happened at certain times. You've got to be able to read a horse race. It can't just be presented to you in a statistic.
And unwittingly, Simon, you've put your foot finger on sport in general is just now statistic-based. Oh. Football, cricket, tennis, golf, every sport is just based on figures without actually looking at the capabilities or the potential of people who play it.
Now, you two survived in sport on instinct.
And reflex, that's exactly right.
But you survive, and you can't... The moment I think you coach that out of a game or try and limit that, you're in trouble. And if you used football, if I could use I may be right off the mark here, but if I used Richmond as a test case in the last 4 years, one, they enjoy footy, two, all they do is go forward. They don't handball to a bloke that's a metre away from them with three blokes around him. You know, it's just...
Reflex.
They're instinctive. They just go... They say, hey, let's go towards our goal. And you guys prided yourself on instinct. It wasn't coached out of you. We needed a rev every now and then. And I just think everything's got a little bit too much. We wrap people up and, you know, the poor soul, you know, mentally you can't handle. Well, mentally you can't handle. You should go and mow the lawns and sweep the footpath, because sport hasn't changed that much that we should let mentally people who are not capable of handling the pressure mentally into the game.
So the great thing that you've been self-deprecating about, Simon, and I don't want to embarrass you, is that you suffered an illness, which you got cancer.
Yes. Why did you say it like that? Why did you say cancer? Just say
Well, I was trying to think of what sort of cancer.
You've had cancer? Cancer.
I was trying to think of what sort of cancer. Well, cancer's cancer. Looking at it. No, it's not. It's you had...
Non-Hodgkin's lymphoma.
That Hodgkin's, that's correct.
So what's that one?
I don't know. Cancer.
No, Simon, I've got written down here that Don and I have had cancer. We've had prostate cancer. You've had... I couldn't think of Hodgkin's.
And Non-Hodgkin's.
So what's that one?
Now, hang on, just before you say
sure,
that.
Sure, Don. Hey? I'm not sure. It's well...
Lymph... Is it
it's a lymph. It attacks your lymph system.
Lymphoma.
Yeah.
Well, you're pretty lucky.
Yeah.
You played with it, didn't you?
That's
you
why played I brought it up.
You played with it when you had you were playing cricket at the end there.
Yes, that's why I brought it up. That's what actually thwarted your career, didn't it?
It didn't help.
Well, that's right.
I was 23, I think. We were going to the World Cup in India, I was in trouble pre the World Cup in India, and for purely selfish reasons.
What pain was it? Pain.
Pain. Yeah, I had a lump on my rib on my left hand side.
You kept that to yourself.
I didn't really keep it to myself. I forced a couple of doctors to do things that they wouldn't normally do, like
what?
Well, standing in there. Kitchen on a Saturday morning, putting needles in, sucking stuff out, and you know, trying to get rid of the pain. But that, but again, I did that. I literally forced them, you know, and I did it for one other reason. I'm not going to, you know, this could be my only shot at winning a World Cup, and I thought, no, I'm not. So I didn't know exactly what it was, but in those days, if you got a lump, you straight away. Everyone, you know, our parents started out. A lump was, it was the first thing you thought of. So, but. Long story short, I went to Canberra, flew myself to Canberra, went and saw a guy. We took a photo of my rib cage. There was no rib there. A rib had disappeared.
What?
And there was all these little black, like a little Kosciuszko across the rib cage, but no rib. So he gave me a shot in this lump, and it went away. Cortisone and some other gear. And I stayed overnight in Canberra. I went back and saw him the next morning. I said, it's gone. I'm right. And he said, no, you're not right. I said, yeah, I'm right. I'm going. You know, so the next week, off I flew to India. And about 2 days into the trip, we're in Madras in our build-up to the first game. the original lump came back and he had one on either side. And I thought, oh, Jesus, now I am in strife. And again, I was no martyr. I just wanted to be part of it. And I said, well, this can wait 10 weeks. We get on with the business. So, you know, when you had a shower and that, you used to keep your arm across your rib because the blokes would say, it was half a golf ball and two other lumps.
Did it restrict you at all?
Oh, no, not really, Don. No, it was bearable.
So,
bearable.
Yeah.
The mental side was harder than the physical side.
Yes.
The mental side to stay up. You know, we had some funny times, and you look back and laugh, and I even laughed then. We beat Pakistan in Lahore in the semi-final, and, you know, we were rushed back to the hotel because the Pakis, they were shaking the bus as we were leaving. They didn't think it was good that we beat them and we're into the final and they weren't, and it was quite scary. But we get back to the hotel and there's, you know, I was down because I'm thinking, Jesus, now we're back to India, play the final, I go home and I find out what this is. So I was a bit down. So, you know, I didn't stay long at the party and I didn't mind a party and went back to my room. Well, we had a team meeting then in India in the build-up to the final in Delhi. No, not in Delhi, in Calcutta. And we had a fine session and I got fined for being a party pooper and da-da-da. And again, you know, whatever it was, 20 US, you know, you folded out and gave 20 US in. Well, the blokes, after I got diagnosed a week later after I got home,
oh, yeah.
Oh, Scoob, sorry, mate. You know, but you couldn't say anything. But no. We all laughed about it. All so, laughed about it. And still to this day, still the funniest one was Greg Ritchie, who, you know, fantastic sense of humour, fat cat. He rang and he said, oh, mate, that bat you made 100 against us with last year, you might be using it for a while. Do you mind potting the post up to me? Like, you know, that was fantastic. You know, that sort of humour, that's what cricket is about in a way, because you have so much time sitting around with each other like we are now talking. And you know, we do this for 6 hours a day when we're playing cricket, because sometimes if you weren't called on that day, we're sitting around having a yarn.
So, Simon, you're an extraordinary man. Fancy not saying that was... an impediment to your cricket career going through that, and you wouldn't even mention that if I'd brought it up. And I wasn't scared of saying you had cancer. I couldn't think of the cancer that you had, so don't worry about that because we've all had it. But that is extraordinary. That would be one of the main reasons why you probably couldn't get back into the side, because at the prime of your career you were thinking about other things. And I saw this in the Wikipedia. It said that the greatest strength that you had was having your mind overcome the adversity. Would that be correct?
That was the greatest lesson I learnt.
Yes.
Was just how strong our mind can be no matter what we're dealt, you know. And we're all at the ages now, and actually James and I were talking about it on the way down, you know, that we're all at the ages now of that.
So how long ago was that?
Oh, geez, I was 23 or 24. How old
is James?
18.
Well, so this was pre-James.
Mm. Oh, yeah, well, pre-James. But, you know, it's just, it's one of life's great experiences in my personal life. It's still the most positive thing I've ever done, albeit it was the most individual thing I've ever done in my life, but it taught me the most lessons in that period of time. It was extraordinary. There was good lessons and bad lessons. One of the bad lessons was when I started playing again, I got some leadership roles in cricket. Now, blokes would come up and say, you've got a headache. So you go, what? What? You want to go off the ground because you've got a headache? You're kidding me, aren't you? Just been sitting with six blokes who are probably dead now. You know, they had more than a headache. They didn't give up. You know, so it took a while to re-stabilise, if you like, to. And again, I'm no martyr, but it takes you places that, you know, you've got to redirect your energies when you come out the other side, because sometimes your expectations are too high for in normality. And that's not putting me on a pedestal, and you guys know.
Please stop apologising for yourself because it's. Everything you say.
I would, if we could take this a little bit further, and we can discuss this. You know, we talk about Dean Jones now, and there was Shane Warne. There's two blokes that you could relate to in cricket. You know, they're pretty tough mentally. Do you reckon these guys, society's gone now that it's a bit soft and we've got to cater and pamper and whatever else. Whereas a true champion is really tough. I mean, Costa Zou had, you know, ability to, as a boxer to fight, but he was also pretty good. So was Jeff Fenwick. And you talk about Jones, he had the skill, but he was bloody tough. And so would Warren be. Do you think guys, and they've never gone on and coached or imparted their knowledge to the, do you think because of their toughness, young blokes just couldn't come up?
Couldn't relate.
Or their expectation?
Do I need to repeat that question?
That's a really, really good statement, Don. I agree with you to the level where we see now in modern day sport where there are people that are in a way meant to coach that toughness into you, and that doesn't happen. If you individually can't bring that out, you're buggered, in my opinion. You're buggered at that elite level. So
it's innate.
Yeah, once those hurdles are in front of you, if you balk and look and don't run straight at them, you're in strife. That's really simple to say. So I don't think probably people with that mentality are suited in a way to coaching in the modern era, because they will look someone in the eye and say, it's time, champ. You either have it or you don't. You won't be here next time if you don't show you've got it now. So at times you need that person to look you in the eye and make that statement. And the people that don't react the right way, I think that's the old way. We used to make decisions, so right, got a bit hard and he didn't want to go the journey. So best and selection comes up, he's done. These days it's no, he can still play a role because he can be an outsider or this or that. So we've sort of made positions for all sorts of mentality in sport. Now people will probably say,
but do they succeed? Do they succeed?
Good question. Very good question. Do they? You know, who wins the premiership this year? The most skilled side or the most mentally tough side? Now I'm not sure what that answer is.
But even with your horses, you must see horses that are tough, you know, that won't, you know, you watch the race and say, shit, this thing won't give in, it's going to have a go. So it comes out no matter what sport. You know, I've had race horses, you put them into show jumping, get to a certain height, they're on the go, but they just can't finish off. And that trait comes over when they show jump as well. Do you find that in just about all the different sports you've been in?
Yeah. So often in horse racing, your toughest horse is your slowest. He keeps finding a way just to be competitive. If you can put that mentality of that toughness into your most skilled horse, you've got a superstar. I think we've got one on the horizon right now.
You have?
No. The world of racing, the Australian world of racing has.
Who?
Russian Camelot. I think he's an absolute superstar. And I think he's a horse that can lead and win. He can travel midfield and win. And he can travel last and win. Now, and he's only had 6 or 7 starts in his life. So I hate to think, I can't wait to see him at 15 starts, because I think he'll be absolutely bomb-proof. I think he'll go and win our Cox Plate. He'll probably may win our Melbourne Cup this year. If he doesn't win it this year, he'll win it next. I think he's just an all-round superstar. And we don't often see those, because same thing. You know, we make excuses if the pace was on a bit too much, or he just got held up at the wrong time. And, you know, Mooneyville, the Cox Plate, we spend 51 weeks of the year making excuses for horses that don't win races at Moonee Valley. There's hardly a year in the history of the Cox Plate that the best horse hasn't won that race. It's hardly a year, because they get around there and they can get around the valley all right. Slow ones all can't.
If I may, who put the fear of God into you when you played cricket? Did anyone intimidate you, or this is probably a mind over, this is probably what we were just talking about. You probably feared no one, but were wary of them.
Yeah, that's perfect, Sam.
Yep.
Who improved? You could never let reputations or pace, you know, the West Indies were dominant in my day.
Yep.
And we eventually turned that around. You know, they were, are amazing, the West Indies. If you went out and had a good day, and good day in 50 over cricket in my day was 240, 230, you'd had a ripping day, yeah? 4.3. Now everyone was, whoa, haven't they smashed it? West Indies would get those in 36 overs. But if you scored 180, often we beat them because they'd play a different game, and the next thing you had them 5 for 60, and they didn't have the firepower to blast their way out anymore. You know, you had a Dujon and a Marshall coming in, and you could hold yourselves, you know, could hold them down a bit. So you never let fear
intimidate
guide your destiny. On the, you know, you have to let nature take its course, and the moment fear starts guiding your natural ability, you're in strife. So that probably is the epitome of what intimidation means.
And were you good on the lip? Did you that stuff? We're trying to ban people calling each other silly sausages and all that sort of stuff. Pretty part of the game in those days, wasn't it? As long as you kept away from
We went too far in our day. It was too far. But
was it?
But it has been, you know, to a level now, the scrutiny that's there now, you know, because part of it's for the person that's doing it too. Part of it, the person saying it, is getting the best out of themselves. Yep. It's the way that they bring themselves to the contest. Yep. You know, everyone keeps saying, well, that's a weakness and you shouldn't do that. Well, I say, stuff that up, you jumper temp. You might have done 6 years at Melbourne Uni, but you're not telling me how I go out in front, Don Scott at 6'5", built like a tank. You know, I might want to go up and grab him by the jumper and call him names and shake him. Yep. And to try and show him I'm tough underneath, I'm absolutely petrified of what's about to happen. But if that was the way I went about it, let it, you know. So I don't mind how people go about it. Some are quiet, some are mouthy, whatever makes them tick, as long as they get the job done.
And you played with Dean Jones?
A lot.
Yes. And
Victoria or Australia or One Day?
Both. Dino and I started. He was such a polarising figure, Ledge. I'll never forget, in 1980, 81, there was a carnival play between combined high schools, associated public schools, associated grammar schools, and Vic Country in Melbourne.
Yeah.
And we, associated grammar schools who I was with, we were playing combined high schools at Scotch College. I'll never forget it. I'd never met Dean Jones in my life. The presence he had that day of strutting around and the way he was hitting the balls in the warm-ups, and I was captain of the AGS and he was captain of combined high schools. That was the first time I'd ever met him. And I thought, how much of an opinion has this bloke got of himself? Yeah. Well, that was the first day we met. We spent the next 13 years playing cricket together. I never changed that opinion once, but that was what made Dino tick. Was who Dino was. That arrogance is he thrived off that arrogance. He thrived off your dislike of him. He wanted you to dislike him as a competitor, as a player. In my opinion, I might be completely wrong. Poor old Dino's not here to tell me whether I am right or wrong. But that's the way I thought what made, because you couldn't go out of your way as much as Dino did for people to dislike you on the cricket field if it didn't give you a buzz. And I think it gave him a massive buzz.
We had a very interesting chat here, which people are welcome to get onto our podcast, number 39 it was, the podcast we did. We had a very chat to him on the phone about when he gave the medal back. He had a one-day medal named after him, didn't he, Don? What? And he gave it back. He said he'd... was disgruntled with Victorian cricket, or to an extent Australian cricket, and so they might have. You might have been absolutely right. He might have gone out of his way to have them not be au fait with some of his things.
The subcontinent really embraced Dino.
Yep.
He'd had coaching jobs overseas, but hadn't had any here, and he'd applied for coaching jobs here.
Yeah, he said
and
that.
I think that's what broke, you know, really disappointed him in the end, that particularly did. From a Victorian point of view, is to say, hey, guys, you're not even giving me a look in here. Now, I've no doubt that's scarring from when he played, because Dino called a spade, and there would have been a lot of people thinking, you'll be getting nowhere while I've got hands on the reins, you'll be getting nowhere quick in this place. So, but Dino was a polarising figure. You know, some people loved him, some people disliked him, but that was Dino.
And, no, that's, he said all that. He, you could read between the lines when we spoke to him here, about 8 weeks ago, wasn't it? And you could tell that he was very...
He was very passionate about the
disenchanted
game.
Disenchanted about how he'd been treated here, I think, whether it's his fault or their fault or a communication breakdown. And we did say to him, you know, he was giving all these things back, and he said they can take his name off all these things if they wish. And as we said, now, Dean, that would be, never forget this, mate. It's your family and your friends and your relations that want your name to be immortalised, didn't we, Don? We said that would be a hasty thing to do. Let them revel in the fact that you were a star, whether you were disgruntled or not. I think that's fair to say, isn't it, Don? We said that to him, and he was very happy to openly chat about that. Now, can I... Yep. Why, or did you say why they called you Scoob? Did you mention that? I said you called you Scoop.
Scoop came out of a...
Is this all right to mention this?
Yeah, it is.
Thank God for that. It could have been because you did...
It started as Scuba. And...
Why?
We played North Melbourne at Arden Street. I was on Malcolm Blight. I think he kicked 13 for the day.
Until half-time? Yeah.
Until half-time, he's probably had 6 or 7.
Yeah.
And I, unfortunately, we went into a marking contest at a time where I was somewhat close to him. And I landed on his foot. I sprained my ankle. I went down and I thought, I'm not sure how bad it's sprained, but it's probably a better idea I stay here and I'll get myself back up. So they carried me off the ground on a stretcher.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So it was quite... Badly strained.
Sprained.
I don't know what was sprained. My ego, my sense of whether I could play or not, I don't know. But so off I went. I think Robbie Elphingstone, one of the other taller guys in the back line, got hurt that week as well. And the next week we're coming up for a game at Rabbit. I'm not sure who it was against now. And Jezza rang on the Wednesday night and said, look, are you any chance? I said, oh, he's still sore. He said, go and see Doc and see if he can give you a shot and we'll see, and you know, we'll give you till Saturday morning. So Doc gave me a shot, and we used to do the heat and ice treatment. Put, you know, your foot in a boiling water and then put it in ice. And so we did that for 2 days. And on a Saturday morning, I went for a bit of a run. I said, I think it's going to be okay. We tape it up and get the shot. I think I'll be all right. So we came to the team meeting that day. And everyone sit there, and I walked in. I haven't been to the club all week, and you know, everyone thought I was going to have an amputation. You know, I was carrying on that much about this crook ankle, and I'm named at centre half back. And Grant Thomas, he said, "What are you doing here?" I said, "How come you're?" He said, "You took a dive on us last week, did you?" And then one of the other blokes yelled, "Hey, you bloody scuba diver!" And that's as simple as it was. It stuck from that day on. I was called Scuba.
Oh, that's fantastic.
That was, you know, 8 or 10 games into you know, that unbelievable 24 massive games of football I played.
That's extraordinary. I just want, was John Bartlett, did yes. he oversee
He did your... my procedure on yes. my side when I got home.
I wanted to mention him.
But I'd had a fair bit, even stuff prior to then with ankles and knees and stuff. And
that's why I mentioned him, because
he was an orthopaedic.
He did about 6 of my ankle operations. I was almost on first, sending Christmas cards. I knew his family, everyone. I've spent more time with him in my football career doing operations. But that's why I asked him, because I didn't think he was a Hodgkin's lymphoma man.
He wasn't, but he did the biopsy.
I see.
So I'm assuming... A great man. Surgeons to be able to do that, and I'd seen John for this prior, and he's a lovely human being,
lovely man.
And I knew I was in deep shit. He did the biopsy. I was back in my room at Warringal Hospital, waking up, and he came and sat on the end of my bed, and I'm sort of waking up, and I looked at him, and I could see he was upset, and I said, "It's cancer, isn't it?" And he said, yes. And you know, he got probably more upset than I did. Oh shit! This is not looking good.
Yeah,
if the doc's more upset than I am, I'm in, you know, I'm in strife. But he was a gorgeous human being and stayed in contact and was a fantastic man.
Now, finally,
do you? No, not finally.
Oh, okay, Don. Well, not finally. Just let me ask you this: do you have any ongoing tests or problems? I get tested every 6 weeks to see if the prostate, so all that's okay. Yep. It's just gone now.
After 5 years, was no more. I've got no more likelihood than anyone else.
Anyone? Yep.
So 5 years was the mandatory time then.
Yep.
And 5 years I came through scot free. So sort of by 30 or 31, I was, if you like, a normal resident.
Out of the woods.
Yep. So, but you know. You guys would have heard it all before. You know, people say cancer is a life sentence, and I agree with them completely. Cancer is an absolute life sentence. What it ain't is a death sentence.
Yes.
And it's a life sentence because I don't think there's been a day since I had cancer that I haven't thought about it.
Really?
In some shape or form, whether it's reading the paper.
Yeah.
You know, Sam, when you on the footy show, you were going in to have your operation, was all live on telly, and you know, you're in your gown and all.
Yep.
There's a reminder everywhere we go, whatever it is. Someone just having a beer at the pub was, Billy got diagnosed the other day, or Jack got diagnosed, or Sarah got this. You know, so it's a life sentence in that capacity, and you have to be aware of that, and you've got to get your head around that. That is always going to be a challenge for you every day for the rest of your life, and you've got to make that a positive experience. And I think that's where you get to. You make it a positive experience.
Just our great friend, mutual friend, Shane Warne.
SK.
Just I say this, if they'd ever played cricket in America, Shane would be the biggest pop star in the world. Mm-hmm. Would be as big as any pop star in the world.
He would have been sucking on a bigger cigar than Michael Jordan.
An enigma, and I know he's a great friend of yours. We went to his... The last time I think we were allowed to go out together, not you and I, but he had a party at his house.
That's when you said I was a wonderful Melbourne footballer.
That's right. Who did I get? I don't know who I got mixed up with. Max Walker maybe I got mixed up with.
Thanks for that.
Well, you were a contemporary of his, weren't you? No, he was before you.
Max had a few years ahead of me.
Yeah, a few years before. Yeah, a lot.
Thank you for that. I'm looking that well, am I?
Maxie. Now, Don, have you got any more questions?
He hasn't answered my question.
Well, what is it?
Well, the question is the one-day test player. You really haven't answered that. Okay, we won't use you, but there are players. Finch, for example, Max, just a couple that come to hand. They seem to pigeonhole these guys. Why can't they play both forms of cricket?
The test match cricket, Don, the best way I can answer that, The first thing you've got to have to be a successful test cricketer is an impenetrable defence. Defence is still your key ingredient, particularly with top order players, because there are times where you have to just hold out for quite long periods of time. You don't have to do that in one day cricket and 20 over cricket. You know, at times you can turn aggression around on that. But there are even times great players like Ian Botham, who didn't look technically spot on, had to survive an hour and a half or 90 minutes, and the West Indies were at him, and he'd still get in there and hang in there. So it's a subtle difference, but it's a difference.
But what do you mean about you got to defend, or they got the defensive side to their game? You just got to hit the bloody ball, bat. What are you talking about? Is it technique or...?
It is technique.
So these the one days or the 220s haven't got the right technique. Is that your cricket?
Many of them haven't.
If we're using test cricket as the standard,
unfortunately, in our day, test cricket was the standard, and then you work. It was the top standard, and then you worked down from there to one day cricket. So the first thing you got out of bed and wanted to be was a test cricketer. So you worked on all those deliberate methods of defence to make sure that they were as spot on as possible, because you knew you had to bat long periods of time, because that was ultimately where you want to be. These days, and we get back to I suppose, excuses in sport, if you like, these days, you can get out of bed and you can either be a test cricketer, a one-day cricketer, or a 2020 cricketer. And that changes the whole philosophy on what a test cricketer is, because you're learning these shots back here for 2020 that have no relationship to what you have to do in a test match, but you're learning them first.
Well,
so you're saying that test cricketers are not as technique-wise or technically not as good?
In the future, they won't be, in my opinion.
It's certainly gone by. The traditions of batting, for example, have certainly gone by, haven't they? You know, the technique required that was taught.
Yeah. Say a Glenn Maxwell. In our day in one-day cricket, you used to say, okay, who are we bowling to? You're bowling to Gordon Greenidge. Okay, he'll cut you. He's not a big driver. He'll cut and pull. He's a back foot player. So we would keep the ball up on and just outside off stump. And that would, Gordon could hit you probably for a four in two spots. He'll cut you for four or he'll pull you for four. That was so that we, if you got the balls in the right areas, you cut off his boundary shots. That's our team meeting. The team meeting now, if you went into a team meeting and say, how am I going to bowl to Glenn Maxwell? Good luck. Because he'll reverse sweep you for six. He'll sweep you for six. He'll hit you down the ground for six. Hit you over cover for six. Hit you over mid-wicket for six. So this array of shots that they have now, because of the proportion of practice they're doing for 50 over and 20 over games, is so different to when we played. That's why they score now 350 and 380 and 360 in 50 over cricket. It's extraordinary. So as a bowler, bowling hasn't kept up with batting in the reduced forms of the game, the reduced over forms of the game. Batting surged ahead and bowling hasn't caught up with it yet.
Now, Don, we're stopping this for two reasons. One, you have now started to drift off mic, and you're very hard to hear. You've just completely...
Is he having a...
No.
Well, the thing's in my bloody mouth. Where do you want it to be?
We want you to speak into it, so you're not going to have to speak into it anymore now because we're winding this up. I tell you what we've learned today, that you can't concentrate by speaking to the mic for more than half an hour, and that with the man that we've asked in is probably the most humorous. It makes me laugh more than anyone I know. I don't know why, just because he's got a great sense of humour, and he's an enabler, a star St Kilda footballer, great one-day player, made the quickest number of runs in 20 minutes ever in the history of the universe, and he's a star, and he's brought his son with him, and he lives up in Kilmore, and we thank you very much for coming in, Simon O'Donnell Scuba.
I'm open around the streets late at night. Worry because you ain't treating me right. Come back again. I'm just crazy about you, babe.